Hello everybody, welcome to the New in Chess podcast, where we talk to grandmasters, authors, trainers and other personalities from the fascinating world of chess. The New in Chess podcast is brought to you by DG Team, the leading producer of chess clocks and sensory chess boards. My name is Dirk-Jan ten Heusendam. My guest today is Dutch grandmaster Luc van Wely, a friend of the New in Chess podcast who has been our guest before, or rather, I should say today, I'm his guest, as I'm visiting him at his home in the south of the Netherlands, where we're sitting in a study filled with hundreds of chess books and lots of chess paraphernalia, such as cups, medals and whatnot. I'm visiting Luc on the eve of the Dutch Championship, which starts tomorrow on Saturday, the 4th of July in Amsterdam. And Luc is an 8-time Dutch champion. And 26 years after he first became Dutch champion, he's going to try to win a 9th time, which, if he succeeds, would mean that in the list of all-time greats, he'd catch up with 9-time winner Jan Timman. No matter what happens, the record holder will remain for the moment the father of Dutch chess, Max Öwe, who won the title 12 times in a time span of 34 years. But we'll not only speak about the upcoming Dutch championship. Luc has also agreed to share his thoughts about Jan Timman, a dear colleague of his and an inspiration for many years, who died earlier this year on February 18 at the age of 74. But first, we're going to talk about something entirely different. It's a brief 3-day trip that Luc made before we met here. And I feel very fortunate that he found time to receive me at all, because if I look at his schedule of the past 2 weeks, it's amazing that he found a time slot for me. So Luc, what were you doing in Mumbai this weekend, and how much time did you spend there?
Well, first of all, it's nice to be again on the podcast of New in Chess, and I guess we were not done yet last time, and I'm afraid after this podcast we still have some things to talk about. So, and okay, you found the perfect excuse to visit me. I mean, you visited Jan Timman many times, and I think you never visited me, at least here in this place, you know. And
that's true.
Yeah. So yes, I was in Mumbai in India for 3 days for the Global Chess League draft, and it was actually a very short trip, and it was like in and out. Let's say the traveling itself was like at least 24 hours to go to India and back. And basically I spent like 48 hours in India itself, you know. So at least I think, because the trip was so short, probably I will not be jet lagged too much because I kept the curtains closed, you know. So I had no idea what time it was. I was in charge of the drafting of the team for Triveni Continental Kings, and we had already had locked up Firuja, Wei and Sujina. So we had to draft 3 more players.
Yeah,
and I think I'm not sure if it's already official now, but
did you get what you wanted or the hoped for?
You never get what you wanted, but and you hope that the other guys are sleeping, and you can just basically rob the bank without while those guys are just sitting there and smiling. And to be honest, I wanted to get this guy Erdoğmuş
from Turkey, the young star.
Yes, and I think he's interesting. Player with a huge potential, and I like always to invest in young players, but it didn't really go that way, because I was not the only one who fought like that. And the year before I wanted to have Sindorov, and also was some guy who not sleeping on Sindorov either.
Yeah.
So, but okay, I think our base team is good, and I think we also improved a bit over last year's team. So, but in the end, it comes down to the coach.
Yeah, and that's you.
Yeah. So,
well, let's say not everyone is familiar with the Global Chess League. It's in the fourth season now. And some people may have heard, I mean, all the teams, they have fancy names, such as your team, the Triveni Continental Kings. To me, it always sounds or feels like a bit of some in-between between chess and gaming.
Let's say our team is sponsored by Triveni. That's a company, and okay, and because of the and the team is then called Triveni Continental Kings. So, and this year it will be in Bangalore in September, just 2 weeks before the Olympiad will start. So I will be in Asia for a month, 2 weeks Bangalore, 2 weeks Samarkand.
You go from Bangalore straight to Samarkand.
Yeah.
Well, that's tough.
Well, okay. I don't need to play, but the tough part is that I have to watch the games. You know, and sometimes when you're watching games, you go through an emotional roller coaster, and okay, sometimes you want to kill somebody, you know, but okay. Yeah.
But it's also it's a long time from home. I mean, and
yeah,
I mean 1 month. So, let's say the teams, they are besides the fancy names, they are composed of icons, prodigies, superstars men and superstars women, and I guess someone like Erik Must, that he still is among the prodigies, while you might as well see him as one of the superstars already.
Oh, he's a superstar.
Oh, he is all. I think he would object
to be a prodigy.
Yes.
And well, it's like the same if I would play, let's say, Wagon's a B group and you call me challenger. I would also object to that. Although maybe that's maybe the current situation, but I would object to that.
Yes. And with good reason. I mean, he's turned 15 now, so he might still qualify as prodigy. But if you hear Magnus Carlsen speak about him, how good he is, and how much he sees him as a new star, then he's definitely past this phase of being a prodigy. So you're not allowed to say who you.
Well, I don't know, but I think the news was spread around anyway by Twitter and pictures, and so and let's say so my team consists of Kostanyuk. I mean, she was already part of the team for many years, but for tactical reasons we had to put her back in the pool, in the draft pool, because we could also retain her just like that without any bidding for her. And we have Arvind.
Yes.
And we have as a prodigy we have Pranav Venkatesh.
Oh yes, yeah, also very strong and up and coming.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I think we have a good team. We already had a good team. I think we improved a bit more. But okay, let's say if we got Erdog, most probably we wouldn't have gotten Kostanyuk, you know, and we wouldn't have gotten Pranav Venkatesh. You know, that's the part of the deal. But yeah. As you said, okay, I wanted to have all of them, but okay, yeah, cannot.
Yeah, 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 yeah. So there's a couple of players that are on your team, and then for the rest, there's a pool of players that you have to bid for, and you have a limited amount of points or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. But I must say, this year it was especially crazy because okay, Aronia was also in the pool, and you know, me and Levon, we go way back, and you know, I like him, you know, and he was part of our Triveni in season one, and he was also very important. He was sort of also kind of a spiritual leader, you know, so So, of course, we want to have him in the team. But when the bidding started, before I could even open my mouth, the bid was raised so high, you know, that's okay. it was crazy, yeah. So.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And at the same time, if somebody overspends on a player, then it, well, goes at the cost of other...
Yeah.
Yeah, so... and, well, so that is in September, and it's quick chess, right?
Rapid chess, yeah. I don't know, like... 20 minutes plus maybe some 5 seconds increment or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And can obviously be followed online, everything. But now you're preparing for the Dutch Championship. Well, preparing, I mean, you just told me what you were doing the past week. Maybe that you should share that with the readers. I mean, there may be people at home who think you're a lazy bum and you're just sitting here and preparing for the Dutch Championship. But you had some other things going as well.
Yeah, well, you know, okay, last month it was very busy. First of all, I had the French League.
Mm-hmm.
Started, let's say, beginning of June.
That was the Top 16.
Yeah.
Which lasts, what is it, 2 weeks or?
Like 11 days.
11 days, yeah.
So... And then when I came home, I had a few days at home. And then, you know, I'm also involved... with the ECU elections, we can talk about it later, and we visited the...
ECU is the European Chess Union, so the continental...
Yeah, this year you have the elections of the ECU and the FIDE, so the FIDE will be in September during Olympiad, and the ECU election will be in July in Romania.
Mm-hmm.
So we visited the World Youth in Italy, just for 2 days, just to speak to some people. I just also like to see, you know, to speak to some friends and stuff like that.
Because of your ties with Italy.
Yes. So Italy is very familiar for me, I'm very friendly with the Italian president. So, and after that, I already had a plan to play a tournament, rapid tournament in Luxembourg, in Echternach, for 2 days. I won my first 7 games pretty smoothly, and then two easy draws in the last 2 rounds. So
And that was enough for first place.
That was enough to clinch first.
Yeah.
So job done there. Then Sunday evening, I took the train to Paris.
Of course.
Yeah, we went to this Blitz Society. There were some events going on in the Blitz Society. Spent there for 2 days. Came back Wednesday afternoon, and then Saturday I went to India because what to do? Right? nothing else to bed to do. I don't have a family. Don't have children. I don't need to prepare for the national championship. So
yeah. So you have 2 kids. You have a son and a daughter.
Yeah.
And did they object to say, well, what are you going to do in India?
They were happy that the trip to India was only 3 days.
Okay.
Yeah. I would prefer at least to be, if I would go there, at least, you know, there would be a better ratio between traveling and actually being there. You know, that. But okay, now it was just a quick in and out, you know, and... So just a draft and some small PR things. So it is what it is.
Yeah.
But okay, they call me. Some people call me They call me dopamine guy. You know, there's always. I was looking for, you know, action or trouble or whatever.
Yeah.
But at least compared to last year. Last year I had like half a day to prepare for the national championship, and now I have 2 days.
2 days.
So it's like four times, and even Johan van Verreest is not playing this year. So I mean, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah. So the tournament starts tomorrow. The day after this is broadcast, and it's a knockout system this year. The two absentees are Anish Giri and Jordan van Verreest, who have commitments elsewhere and probably wouldn't like to risk their ratings, most probably. So who are you? You are the top seed. Who do you see as your main rivals?
Well, for everybody, the main rival is always yourself. Because it mostly depends on what kind of shape you go. to the event.
I mean, specifically for Knockout or in general?
Yeah, I think, well, okay, Knockout is, I like it, you know, because it puts much more pressure on every game or every move, and in some way I like it, you know. Mm. But okay, it's in some way also, imagine, let's say by rating, at least I'm the favorite. And, well, I mean, you don't like much variance when you're the favorite, so you like to have a double round robin or something like that, you know, and the slower time control, the better.
Yeah.
I don't know, first round I'm just playing Thomas Beertsen, and historically speaking, I'm not doing greatly against him. Mm. And okay, I didn't really want to look further in the bracket. But normally, if I'm supposed to play Max Wambedam, if I would pass, and you know, Max now is like 25-30, well, before he was 26-80. So tell me which Max I'm going to play.
Yeah, which will probably be a surprise for him as well.
Yeah, and apart from that, you know, I've been working for many years with Max, you know, so it's kind of, you know, delicate situation anyway. So, and then, you know, the thing is that, let's say, for my chances in the tournament, I don't like to play Max.
No.
But let's say as a friend and, you know, and stuff like that, it's, well, okay, I wish him the best. But okay, when we play, okay, of course, I want to kill him. Let's not be any doubt about that.
So, you always like rivalries with close friends.
Yes. But some old close friends, like Ivan S, they don't speak to me anymore. So I don't know what's been wrong, but okay.
So you could run into him as well.
Last year we ran into each other, now he knows who's his daddy.
So we're speaking about Ivan Sokolov, and I mean, you used to be good friends. Now there's a brief break from that.
It goes up and down, you know. I have no issues at all with Ivan, and I know it's, but let's leave it like this, that we're both not angels, and but one is acknowledging it and the other one doesn't.
and you don't foresee any problems. I mean, not speaking to him at the moment doesn't influence your mood in any manner.
No. I like to adapt to situations like that.
Yeah. So while we were talking about, you've won that championship 8 times so far. After you won the first time, then you also won the 5 next. So you had 6 in a row, which is, that must be a record, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't think even Ove made that.
Maybe he did also 6, I think.
So... why was that? Well, were those your best years? I mean, that was 2000 to 2005.
My peak was around 2000, 2001, let's say. So, okay. And they were not really uncontested, those titles anyway. So I really had to fight for it. But yeah, let's say maybe around 2000, 2001, I was basically at my peak. But... Nevertheless, now I'm very motivated. Well, people say, okay, you want to equal Timon's record of 9 titles. But actually, my main motivation actually to show to my kids that daddy can still do it. So that, and then, of course, I put a lot of emphasis on physical, my physical condition, yeah?
Yeah.
So I like to have this bragging rights in the gym.
That's good motivation. And of course, all these stats, they are very difficult to compare, because Jan Timman, he had many years that he didn't play the championship. I think Ovi was quite loyal to the championship that he played many times, also at moments when probably he could have done something more interesting for him.
Mm-hmm.
Did you always feel some obligation to play the national championship? Because, well, let's say in the past years we've seen Anish Giri, at some point he stopped playing and then he came back just for one occasion because there was a jubilee. And how do you see that? Do you think it's something that, if possible, you should play?
No. I look at it in, let's say, first of all, it really needs to fit in, let's say, in my schedule. Yeah. So, and if they announce it way before, then it's, of course, easier. You know, then I try to fit it into my schedule.
Yeah.
But if it's, let's say, last minute or something, then I say, okay, guys, sorry, but I'm not going to, you know, change my schedule, my life, just because you're so late. And apart from that, you know, okay, I look at also from how is the prize money and stuff like that, you know, because I think also they have to put some effort, you know, to make it at least a little bit interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, well, I wish it would be also, let's say, maybe with Jordan or Anis, then the title has, let's say, more value. But on the other hand, yeah, in the end, who cares?
Mm-hmm. Well, ideally, you would have all the best players, but it's been a very long time since that last happened. I mean, there was always someone lacking at some point, as far as I remember.
Yeah, because I think the last time that Anis and Jordan played, actually, I didn't play, but it was announced so late that, well, I think that in the period that, you know, let's say my family every year goes in the summer holidays, they go for 5-6 weeks to my family-in-law.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a big expedition. And, you know,
yeah, that's across the pond.
Yeah. And so when the championships is exactly in that period, so that's almost impossible to.
Yeah.
Then I have to.
Because they say, I mean, you like traveling so much, you might join us.
Well, I have to go anyway at some point. But
yeah. No, but the championship is in Amsterdam or in Amstelveen, which is very Aalsmeer.
Yeah.
Sorry, Aalsmeer. And all the information can be found on the website of the federation, how to get there and where it is. We were talking about Jan Timmermans' 9 championships. And when we spoke on the phone last week, then he said, well, in fact, I would like to speak about Jan as well, because he has been a very important figure in your chess life, your career. It clearly affected you when he died. How do you remember? I mean, what role would you say did he play in your chess life?
Yes, well, okay, first of all, you know, before I even started to play against Jan, you know, if you see here the books, you know, that I have so many books of both, Jan and Max Euwe. And, you know, I grew up with his books, you know, and the Great Analysis book what they call the small road, or what you call it in English?
I don't know if there's an English translation of that one, but the
small path to
narrow path.
The narrow path, So, and those were like great books, you know, a book, like a thriller or something like that.
Yeah,
he made
you part of his adventures.
Yes.
I mean, the adventures in the World Championship, and he took you with you.
Although chess-wise, he was not my hero, because it was Kasparov, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Because, but Jan was always, you know, he stood for something, and So yeah, and then, you know, when I start to play him, you know, we started some kind of rivalry, although, you know, Jan fought with this little brat once, you know. I'm Jan Timman, and what this guy wants.
Well, it was a bit of a, I would say, a clash of cultures. I mean, maybe we should take the listeners back to the first time you're going to meet in a big tournament in Amsterdam in 95.
95, I think it was.
Yeah, the Donner Memorial. And you were this, well, this young kid. Well,
big mouth.
Well, you were different from what people were used to in the chess world. I mean, you were bragging about things. Oh, you were challenging people, and you are loud.
Let's say civilized guy like Jeroen Piquet.
Yeah.
Let's say, yeah,
yeah.
Who was maybe show more respect to Jan and. And, well, okay, maybe Jeroen also had some kind of ambition, but maybe he was not showing it, you know, in public.
Yeah, he would not pronounce that in public.
Yes, no, and, yeah.
But well, with you, it was, well, it is part of your character that you not only challenge an opponent, but by doing so, you challenge yourself.
Yeah.
I mean, you claim that you're going to do something, and now you better do it. So what you said before that, I mean, you were going to beat Jan. There was no doubt about it. That and Jan, he was. I mean, he had all those successes, and he was still. He was maybe slightly past his peak then, but still very good. And I didn't have the feeling that he very much liked this. Challenge that came from you, because it was not what he was used to.
Yes.
So,
but okay, the first game with Timon, I lost, and he was very happy about it, of course. Yes.
And in fact, we should describe that game, because he starts. I mean, he's playing this young brat, and he starts with a double fianchetto, and goes for an ending, and then at some point you slip up the ending, and he wins, which is the nicest thing that can happen to the veteran.
Mm-hmm.
See. Doesn't know his endings or whatever,
and
but of course he didn't shut you up for very long, because then in I think half a year later in Wagensee you did beat him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And but you know, if in hindsight I think, you know, in the end, you know, because let's say Jan was playing with guys like, you know, Kasparov, Karpov, you know, and okay, he was just maybe past his prime, but I think. This new rivalry, which maybe I kind of created, maybe in this small artificial way, but okay, I kind of created it, you know, and it gave him some new energy to have some, you know, somebody to fight with, you know, and it's good to have some, let's say, some enemies enemies on the board at least, but apart from that, you know, off the board. I mean, it was always nice with Timon. And on the board, by the way, also, but we had at least a decade, great fights on the board.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very nice to have, because I can, the last game that I lost, played with Timon, and I got mate on the back rank. and he was also very happy about it.
Because
he was completely lost. I said, yeah, I was playing for this. that was very funny. And I remember still when I got mate in the back rank, that I was a bit flabbergasted. How could this ever happen? But okay.
Yeah. No, but I think that was the nice thing, that there was clear rivalry, but there was also affection. And I fondly remember a moment in Yerevan at the Olympiad in 96, that at some point I was having dinner with Jan and some other people, I don't know who, and then you came up behind Jan and apparently Jan had just played a good game or something, and you put your hands on his shoulders and you looked at me and you said, the old guy still knows how to play. And And he was very happy with that. Of course, he wasn't that old, because he was, what was he, 44 or something. But that was a touching moment, because it also indicated how the mood amongst it, well, that's at least the two of you in the team, was good.
Yeah, well, I think with him and Jeroen Piquet, us three, we had a kind of really good bond, you know. And yeah, it was always nice to play together, to play against each other, and also off the board. I think it was kind of a lot of respect, and and there's also a reason why when I was the tournament director in Hogeveen, why I always had, when I had a chance to invite him back, you know, and he liked to play that was at this stage, you know, and and then he played with Jordan van Verreese once. And then he still beat Jordan. Okay, of course, he was also happy. You see, old man can still, you know, keep it there.
Yeah.
But okay, I have the same when, let's say, last in end of May, I played a tournament in Maastricht, in Limburg, in Netherlands. And, you know, five of my seven opponents were aged between 12 and 16. So, a lot of people say, oh shit, I play these young guys. Once you think like that, I mean, you're toast.
Yeah.
But if you have the idea, okay, guys, I'm going to show you who's still the boss. There will be no passage here. Then, okay, then you, and you know, some of these kids, okay, some are respectful, some are, can be pretty cocky, and then I really want, that really fires me up, you know.
Yeah. Because they, well, some of them will have no idea who you are.
Yeah.
And well, in fact, that's what, well, let's, if we look at your rivalry with Jan, which came at a moment when, well, which was slightly behind, past his peak, then you knew how incredibly strong he had been and what achievements he had had. And it's one of the things that we discussed last week, that you get the feeling that some people have forgotten about that period. I mean, how incredibly good he was for how many, for so many years.
Yeah, I mean, let's say he was maybe good for what, at least 30 years of world-class chess. And I don't know if it's typical Dutch, but I felt like, okay, it's way too little respect, you know, for, and that kind of, it was kind of a bit painful to witness that.
Yeah, because his tournament record is just incredible. How many big tournaments he won, also some of them ahead of Karpov, and in fact, let's say when we had the special issue about Jan of Newman Chess, and then people say, oh well, that's a worthy tribute because maybe it's 40 pages or something. I thought it was just nothing, because I only saw what we were not covering, and that was so much. And well, fortunately, we have his books where he where he paints his whole history in such a beautiful manner.
You love chess? Why don't you try New in Chess? With readers in 116 countries, New in Chess is the premier chess magazine in the world. What will you get? Exciting chess games explained by the best experts in a clear and accessible way, on-the-spot reports of the biggest events, top-notch instruction, independent journalism, chess history that comes to life, and great interviews. New in Chess, the way you want it. The beautifully produced paper edition, or the digital edition for phone, tablet, or PC. Give it a try. Go to our website, newinchess.com/magazine, for more information about subscriptions and special offers.
Which are your favorites from his later books?
I'm not sure. Well, I, you know, okay, I like in general the end game studies.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of I always loved that one and found it really amazing that I mean that he could actually create them. You know,
yeah.
I don't know how he's doing it, but okay,
yeah.
But okay, let's say his life was just just chess. I mean, I'm doing many things at the same time. If it's chess or sports or then some politics and you know, all kind of things at the same time, but at home, to be honest, never chess.
Yeah.
And him, although you see here there's a lot of chess stuff around, yeah, but I'm not, it is just fake.
Yeah. No, it's true that his passion for chess was very, very deep and very, well, truthful. You very often see people who are in a sport that there always comes a moment when you said, okay, let's not exaggerate. I mean, there's other things that are more important or whatever. And with Jan, I mean, till the very last moment, he was so much in love with the game and thinking about new studies all the time. And it was just a very natural part of him. It was not that he was fleeing into chess or was, I mean, he just had chess with him all the time.
Yeah. And that's where I'm different with Jan. Let's say, I mean, apart from that, maybe you should not compare us, you know, but that I managed to switch off easily.
Well, of course, he had many other interests, but still, even if he was writing about literature or listening to music, I think in the background somewhere there was, I mean, it's what Magnus also says about himself, that, I mean, doesn't matter. I mean, I'm speaking to you about football, but at the same time, I'm thinking about a position or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very natural part of your system.
Yeah. So, well, talking about Jan, it's, for me, it's still, it is still after, it's like almost half a year ago, and still, you don't realize that the guy is not there anymore. That's also a bit weird feeling.
Mm. Well, it's you realize it from time to time, and then it just hurts.
Yeah,
because it leaves an enormous hole, which was a natural part of your life and of my life and of so many people's lives.
Because I was just sitting playing with him for let's say for 20 years, you know. So it's like So then.
What are your fondest memories of? Of him, or the two of you.
Well, apart, you know, when the first time that we were on the road, let's say in Manila, let's say this was always first time is always.
That was your debut on the Dutch team in 1992.
Yeah. And it was with me. Okay, you were there as a captain, and Jeroen Piket was there, and me and Jeroen were kind of. Let's say what we call four hands on the stomach, you know, and the naughty boys, let's say.
Yeah.
And Jan was kind of, you know, he was like our godfather, you know. Yeah. And
all three of you were very ambitious. I mean, there was no doubt what your shared ambition was there, was to finish really, really high.
Yeah.
And I mean, Jan was definitely no exception there.
Yeah, I think also Jan, he drew with, played Russia. Okay, I lost to Kramnik, but Jan drew with Kasparov.
And he was better. Yeah.
So that also shows that, that we are actually a good team, But okay, it's very hard to single out, we had also a brutally hard-fought match. I think it was in like in 98, I think.
In Breda?
In Breda.
Yeah, that was amazing. I mean, there was 10 games. And then even, I mean, it was a 5-5 tie.
Yeah.
very hard fought. I mean, you were leading first, and then he caught up, and then there was a day for playoffs, which you won. How did that come about? I mean, who were the people behind that?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was actually, I think, okay, we played for the same club in the Netherlands.
At that point.
And actually, I was claiming first board.
Yeah.
Of course. so,
just to make everyone happy.
Yeah. just to show. And then I think at some point, okay, it was like, okay, let's play for it.
Yeah.
So, and then, okay, some money was raised and then we, yeah.
Mm.
And it was nice. And, you know, even the guy who was running the snack bar at the corner where I was living, and he said, oh, you guys, it's like, how is your, you know, personal relationship? It was like, are you guys fighting or what? But okay, right? We had just had this polemic, in the media. It was kind of, give and take, it was kind of fun.
Yeah, because that was, well, something which was your trademark approach.
Yeah, but also Jan, he didn't mind to fire back. Yeah, so that's
okay. No.
So that was also kind of. I mean, if you have one guy who doesn't respond at all, then it's no fun. But Jan, he was up to it. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember we once had this interview which we did for this Dutch weekly Vrij Nederland, where it was you and Jan and Jeroen.
Yeah.
And
did it go well? Yeah.
No, it was very interesting because everyone wanted to score points and Jan not in the last place. I mean, and he was good at that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was very entertaining. Did you write about anything about Jan, or is it something that you've considered? Or
not yet. It's maybe too early for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But. But let's say in my chess career, let's say Jan was a big part of it, So that's some memories, I think maybe I should keep for myself.
No, of course. So you were also talking about all your travels recently, and one of them is in your role as a ticket member of a team that hopes to win the elections of the European Chess Union. You have had political outings in real politics in the Netherlands. Is this in any way connected, or do you feel that you should be part of this?
Well, it's maybe connected because in some way, not because I was asked, of course, to join this ticket, and maybe I was asked because I did have some political experience, some history, and also. I guess I'm kind of well-known name in the chess world, so this kind of adds up. But back in the days when I started my political career in the Netherlands, before that, I always thought politics is a dirty word. I still think so. So nothing has changed there. But okay, since now I know how things are, it's it's kind of funny to see how people behave when the elections are coming, and how people are crawling and changing.
So what are let's say the general interests? Let's say in FIDE, there's the big question: will Arkady Dvorkovich, will he remain FIDE president, or will he, for one reason or another, be beaten by one of his challengers? What is the situation in the European chess union?
Yeah, so the situation is, okay, so you have the guy, Azmai, who is basically the current ECU president, and he's running again.
Yeah, Zurab Azmai Parashvili from Georgia, yeah. Who had, he was re-elected once, right?
Yes, this is his second term. No, actually third term already.
Oh, this is third term.
Yeah, it's a bit long already. Uh-huh. Okay, and then there's one challenger from Poland, Lukasz Turlej. Mm-hmm. And the ticket I'm on is led by Bashar Kwatli. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, and well, I'm part of the team. Mm-hmm. But okay, I think it's a public secret. The one who's kind of, you know, also backing our ticket is Vadim Rosenstein, who's doing actually a lot for chess.
Yeah, Vadim Rosenstein, he is living in Düsseldorf.
Yeah.
And maybe, does he have a German passport these days?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, he was born in...
I think he was born in Russia.
Yeah.
But, okay, I don't know exactly if he's Russian or Ukrainian or... Okay, anyway.
But, yeah, there's always some dispute about that. And he... himself, he wants to challenge Dvorkovic for the FIDE presidency. He is known to many chess players because he organizes many events. He's organized this the World Team Rapid Championships, which includes one amateur board. So this whole championship was created for him to become world champion, which he did two years ago. There's other ones. I mean, he's organized tournaments in Peru, in Hong Kong, in...
Japan, and Brookhouse in the Philippines. I mean, he's basically organized many things. There will be also this match in, I think, in Miami between Uzbekistan and USA, you know.
So he wants to become a FIDE president himself, and he wants to have some control in Europe. And so Bashar Kwatli, who he himself, I mean, he's French, and he ran for FIDE president, I think, twice or something many years ago. And he's probably a name that many people were surprised to see on the ticket, but he's there more as a...
But actually, what I like about... Rothstein, that, you know, because I have the feeling that, let's say, for example, the current administration, they are using the ECU as a business model. So, and I, but what is kind of lacking is kind of, you know, that you want to have that money comes into the chess world, not that the money is being sucked out of the chess world. So
you mean they just try to make a living for themselves, or what do you mean with the business model?
Yeah, I mean, basically, if you look at, for example, the cost of, you know, playing these events, like youth events, senior events, whatever, I mean, they are not market conform. So it means that everybody who's playing there, they're always overpaying.
You mean for the hotels?
For the hotels,
Yeah.
And then we can discuss where this money is going to.
Yeah.
But you like to have, let's say, an event that, let's say, you pay the cost price of something, and there will be some, you know, corporate sponsors, you know, who are kind of, you know, supporting the tournaments, you know, and Vadim is putting money in these events, like all these chess marathon in Peru, or the...
And that's his company's money, or does he have friends, or where
both? That? Yeah,
yeah.
So, but okay, there's always, you know, there's always kind of complaint from, where's the money coming from? You know, and as the chess players, they don't care.
No.
They say, okay, money is good. Okay, I play. But normally the people would let's say the politicians, they try to be certain to be a saint, and they say, oh, why has the money come? Is this clean money or?
Well, that's a good question, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's always. I mean, let's say if you have an event in Saudi Arabia, is this clean money? I mean, it is supposed to be sport washing, but let's say the big tennis players they go or the Formula One is going there or whatever, and you have let's say World Cup football you had it in Russia, you had it in Qatar, you know, in the US, you know, okay, you tell me I don't. It's all kind of very shady.
No, it's clear that there's a lot going on there that that is far from a dream world.
I think that, you know, at some point you need some change, unless the guy is really great. Let's say but let's say Dvorkovic was there for 8 years, and I think 8 years is a pretty long time. Then I think it's time for some new energy, some new input, you know, and some same in Europe, you know, that Asmar Paasvili has been there for 12 years, you know, and now because of, you know, there are some other candidates, suddenly the guy starts to move, you know, is that a bit late or is it a bit suspicious, you know, that, okay, because he's not doing it because he wants to, because he's forced to. And that's kind of.
How do you mean?
Let's say, okay, when other teams are, you know, coming up with some plans and programs, now I also have to do something because, you know, suddenly I'm being challenged, you know, and this, and then, you know, his main reason to do it, it's not the right reason, because he's only doing it just to stay in power, not because he likes it.
That we don't know. I mean,
we are just guessing. Yeah, that's true. But okay.
It is obviously as a Russian president of an international federation, he's not in an easy position. That is,
But I remember the funny thing. I think it was in the FIDE elections in 2014.
In Tromsø.
I think that, what was it, Kasparov was running, I think?
It's funny that you bring this up because I was thinking about the same. So, yeah, go ahead.
So, and then I think one team was promising 10 million and then other guys said, okay, 20 million.
No, which was, cynicism at its at peak level because it was Kasparov who promised 10 million investment and he had Rex Sinkerfield who vouched for that. He said, he really had the money.
Yeah.
And we know now from the kind of money that Rex Sinkerfield has invested in chess over the years that was real money. And Kirsan Lyumchinov, he had his speech and he simply doubled it, which was absolutely based on nothing.
Yeah.
If he
actually would put 20 million, then, okay, at least it would have made, then it would have achieved its goal, you know, because you're pushing your opponent, you know, to double your bid.
Now the effect was that somebody who really wanted to invest 10 million in chess, and that didn't happen because somebody lied.
Yeah.
And people just took that for granted. And it was very funny. It was a very funny moment, but it was also a very sad situation.
It's actually quite common in politics. If you look at, let's say, how when people what they're saying during the American elections, you know, then you know promises or statements are made that they're completely false, you know. So we are kind of, and that's the language claimed to be the ultimate democracy.
Yes, but it sounds like you've become pretty cynical in this.
I told you before that politics is a dirty word, and I still think so. So I haven't changed.
But still, you hope that with your team you would achieve something positive for chess. So.
Yes, I think that would be a positive change. But on the other hand, you know, since I'm such a lazy guy, it means also more work if you win.
More traveling.
Yes. So yeah. more traveling, more problems.
But is it something you would like to do to be an official? To
well, you know, the problem is once you get sucked in, you know, then okay, let's say then my road will not finish at being a vice president.
Then you would
push for more. Yeah.
Like to go all the way.
Yeah.
And not of a continental federation.
Yeah.
But,
Then it doesn't stop there.
This podcast is brought to you by DGT, the chess innovators. At DGT, we want to bring people together and help them grow through play by supporting chess and creating innovative, high-quality products for players everywhere. To find your nearest DGT dealer, please visit our website at dgt.nl.
So that's
let's hear your view for the future, because this is a good moment. It looks like chess is at not even at one crossroads, but at several crossroads, because we have classical chess, we have rapid chess, we have blitz chess. There's all kinds of combinations. Total chess is coming up. You have things like the Global Chess League, which and being part of the gaming world. How is it possible to have one federation for that?
Yeah, well, I think it's possible, but let's say who is actually deciding. So, and you know, although for example, you know, I think for example Magnus, he did a lot for chess, but you know, he has so much power, because without Magnus, if Magnus is not there anymore, there's a big hole in the chess world.
Mm-hmm.
But for example, I mean, it's clearly that him and Magnus and Fide, they made some kind of deal regarding total chess. And because
Fide made a deal with total chess, and only then total chess talked to Magnus.
Uh-huh.
Then.
Okay, because it looked like that. It was like a way to entice Magnus
That's for sure. But it was not in that order. It was not okay. Not that they first got in Magnus and then they got a deal with Fide. It was they first had a deal with Fide and then they talked to Magnus.
Yeah, but they knew that Magnus might like this idea.
Obviously, they hoped.
Yeah,
they hoped that this was the way to keep him on board.
Yeah, and this is kind of I'm not sure I like this kind of, you know, that they try too much to please him.
Well, you can also say that you're adjusting to reality.
But okay. So. I wanted to make a very dangerous comparison, but I'm not going to do that, you know. But no, I'm definitely not going to do that. But
it's not so strange to see if the entire chess world is looking for ways to speed up chess in a responsible manner, then that's what you're doing. That's not so strange.
But total chess is actually kind of combining kind of different forms of different speed of the way chess is being played. So that's kind of weird way to do so. And I like to keep these things, you know, separate.
Yeah, well, it's possible, and well, probably there is still room for, let's say, the old classical tournaments, like they retain their popularity, like Weigensee and the Siegemann tournament. Well, thanks to Magnus, that was a big success. So there still is a wish for that. But at the same time, there's also new technological developments. We cannot ignore the huge online community.
Yeah, no, but okay, let's say, for example, you have now chess is integrated in this eSports World Cup. You know, this is kind of nice, I believe. And okay, that chess becomes faster if that's what people want. I mean,
maybe not all the time, but that's my main question. Let's say you hope for a global organization that looks after chess, but then you're almost at the point where you have to redefine what chess is. I mean, who is it classical? Well, apparently these days it's all of these things, which makes it pretty complicated. And yeah. And you know as well as I do that there's very often that important events are taking place online and you have no idea that they are going on.
Yeah.
There's communities in the chess world, huge communities. They follow this or that or that, and they have no idea of what's happening on the other side of the aisle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. And how can you bring that together?
Yeah, well,
or is it needed to bring that together?
Yeah, that's a difficult question to
so,
answer.
So, big challenges for you as president of FIDE. Look,
yeah.
it's not going to be easy.
Yeah, well, I hope Farim is not listening to this podcast because I will be in trouble.
He'll be happy to work for you.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, no. Let's see how that goes. So these elections, they are in Romania.
Yeah, in Bucharest.
In Bucharest,
18th of July.
So that's where you will be.
Yeah, I will. But let's see how that will go. It's like I will see it as a kind of warm up before the FIDE elections, because you know then you kind of. You can see, the tendencies where things are going, and how people are changing positions,
Who has the money?
Who has the money and who's blinking first, and so it's one way. It's also kind of fun to watch. You sit there with popcorn and you see what's
no, but first you'll have to play the Dutch championship.
Oh yeah, I almost forgot about it. Yes.
Yeah. You still have 2 days to prepare. So suppose if you win, then you go for these 12 of euro.
Well, I like to take it year by year, or let's say, or by 2 years, because I see there's a cycle of 2 years, because let's say I have this year the national championship and the Olympiad, and then I will see where I'm standing, how do I feel, can I make to the next Olympiad, for example, in good shape.
Yeah, because you drew this comparison between you and Jan Timman, that, Jan really eating and drinking, breathing chess, and you had your moments away from chess. At the same time, I must say that what impresses me is how you are still motivated for chess, and that would be impossible if there was no deep burning love for chess.
Well, let's say my deepest love is for winning. let's put it, so let's say if, whatever game or sports, you know.
If we have to lure you away from chess, we have to give you something else where you can win.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but let's say, but okay, let's say from chess part, let's say when I have a game and after the game, I normally analyze it really well, you know, what kind of intrigues me. And in this sense, I'm also kind of a freak, you know. So, because, okay, you need to have some kind of, you know, extreme, you know, parts in you, otherwise you cannot, you know, keep this kind of level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's all about winning. The wish to, the desire to win.
Yeah, sometimes it's, that's a positive way you look at winning, and also if the negative way at looking at it is, let's say that you hate losing, for example. So, but okay, hate losing, it doesn't mean for me that I want to make many draws.
Well, I know chess players who hate losing and they just give up the game.
Yeah,
well, that's
yeah,
the safest way to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's not your plan.
No. But let's say I also hate drawing, and let's say the funny thing was that I had a game in the French league against Romain Edouard, and he's a clear target for me, and he used to be a clear target for me, and was white against him, so what could go wrong? And and then, you know, I messed up the opening, and then I realized things are not looking great. But and then he offered me a draw, and then really, I had to swallow my pride. You know, you know, that was really tough. You know, it felt really embarrassed. You know, to accept it. You know.
Yeah, yeah, but. Yeah, otherwise the risk of really hurting yourself was too big. Good. Well, I wish you lots of luck at the Dutch Championship. Look, it will be interesting to follow your journey there. And good luck with everything else. I mean, keep traveling the world, keep embarking on adventures, and then from time to time, join us to... to digest everything.
Yeah, probably we will meet again, probably sooner than later. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. It was a pleasure, as always. Thank you. Thank you for listening to the New in Chess podcast. The New in Chess podcast can be listened to on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and the New in Chess website. To leave a comment, go to our socials or email us directly at podcast@newinchess.com. If this podcast has gotten you in the mood to read a fine chess book, I mean, for instance, one of those classics written by Jan Timman, or to subscribe to the wonderful New in Chess magazine, then please have a look at our shop on our website, newinchess.com, where you can treat yourself to a great chess read. We thank our sponsors of at GGT for their support, and hope to have you back for our next episode of the New in Chess podcast.